So I'm looking much more into the space where we're looking at the ideas. How do ideas change the world? How do you generate the ideas that are going to create companies that transform the world? How can you reliably be creating companies like Google or Amazon by spotting the anomalies?
Welcome to the Loss and Transformation podcast series dedicated to the complex world of digital transformation. We feature guests from large corporations, startups, consultancies, and more to shed light on the success factors around innovation, transformation, and adjacent topics. We share firsthand insights and inspiration from experts for all the entrepreneurs, entrepreneurs, and anyone curious about digital transformation. Dennis Oakley is the head of business model innovation at Dennis Oakley & Co., his own management consulting firm. With a background in founding several startups, he's now helping other companies transform with business model innovation and shares the tools and methods from his entrepreneurial journey with us. We hope you enjoy this episode. Hi, Dennis. Thanks for joining me today on the show on Loss and Transformation. And I'm very happy to have you here as a guest. And thanks so much for taking the time today as well. And so you are the head of business model innovation at your management consulting firm, Dennis Oakley & Co. And today you're taking us along your past entrepreneurial journey and share about the impact of business model innovation in terms of transforming companies as well. And I'm also super excited to learn more about that. So without further ado, let's jump right into it. And to begin with, I'd like to learn more about yourself and your background first. Basically, your background that makes you the entrepreneur that you are today. Can you share more about that?
Sure, I can, Christine. Thank you very much for having me on here today. I think the thing that started me really off on an entrepreneurial background is when I did a philosophy degree at university, and I got really, really interested in understanding why the world worked. That's why I did philosophy. May not have been the best idea, but I focused very much on the history of ideas. How do ideas change the world? How do they change? How do they interact with each other? And that started me off on my journey. I discovered, like I think a lot of philosophers do, that philosophy is not a particularly good way to get a good job. It's not particularly high paying. And so I ended up going into railway engineering. I became a railway engineer, systems engineer, designing safety critical systems to stop railway trains sort of going into each other at high speed. And that was a lot of fun. I learned how to build systems, build processes, but it was very much a corporate environment. And I was always saying, I want to do this. Why can't we do it like that? What happens if we do it like that? And they kept on saying to me, Dennis, do not reinvent the wheel. We don't do things like this here. And I felt like I was just in one of those medieval Iron Maidens, you know, the sort of the metal cases with the spikes that slowly close down on you. And I felt absolutely trapped. And it got to a point, and I think I was working for a big energy company, E.ON, and my landlord said, we want to sell the house that I was renting in at the moment. So we've got to move on the same day. The New Zealand government said, we'd like to, you're into the pool, you can immigrate to New Zealand. And so my wife and I, we thought, wow, let's go for it. And we dusted off one of our entrepreneurial plans and decided to head out there. And we chose something that we thought was pretty cool. And we had a little bit of a blast as we did it.
Interesting. So you kind of went somewhere completely else in the beginning and figured out, okay, this is not for you. You felt a bit trapped, and that kind of led you to, okay, more to where you are basically today.
Very much so. I mean, one of my big words, my core values is exploration. And you've got to get out. You've got to go out into the jungle, whether it's a mental jungle, a spiritual jungle, a business jungle, a physical jungle, to explore and find the limits. I mean, who wants limits set for you by somebody else? And when I'm working with startups, when I'm doing things by myself, it's always, how can we break those limits? Where are the limits? How can we go beyond them? How do we go beyond the next range of hills? How do we go beyond the next horizon? How do we go beyond Michael Porter? How do we go beyond sort of Philip Kotler in marketing and do something new, something interesting that creates something wonderful? And that's really what drives me.
That's amazing. And you also have been part of founding and running startups as well, right? Can you share a bit about that?
Sure, I can. So my wife and I, she was, I think, 6 months pregnant at the time. We decided that we were going to leave Europe behind and we were going to go over to Asia. We landed in Kuala Lumpur in, I think it was 2007, started up a trading company. We had the insight that the trading industry in the metals sector, which is what we were targeting, was very, very inefficient. Everything was still done by fax, and we'd seen this wonderful piece of software made by a small little company called Salesforce, a little bit bigger now after another 15 years, and we saw that this could change absolutely everything in the industry. And we jumped in there with gay abandon, probably not nearly enough about it we should have done, but we did well. We grew pretty quickly. We had a turnover of, I think, $1.5 million, $2 million by the end of the first year. We got into the finals of HSBC Startup Stars, which is one of the biggest startup competitions in the UK at the time. And I was right up there at the sort of top level of Canary Wharf in London, being quizzed by the great and good of British industry about our business model. And it was absolutely a brilliant start to entrepreneurship when you sort of, you go out and you create something that is creating value, that is disrupting people. And we really, really had our competitors on the run, which was very, very exciting.
Super interesting. So you kind of went abroad and followed your entrepreneurial journey. So you were saying that the startup at first, it was a bit like inefficient. It wasn't performing that well. Can you share perhaps more about what was the underlying problem and how you went from there to kind of solve it?
Okay. I think that's a really good point. I mean, we looked at what the steel and the metal industries was like before we went in, and it's very, very cyclical. In good times, you make a lot of money. We were making 25% margin on every piece of steel that we sold. In the bad times, it's bad. And we knew that this cycle was what it was like. We knew how it was going to work. And then we got absolutely killed because the financial crisis, the cycles just disappeared. It just went down and it flatlined and it stayed flat. I mean, the margins were absolutely minuscule if we could make them. So we got killed by economics, even though we were far more efficient, we were far more effective than everybody else. We outlasted 90% of the competitors in the market. They got wiped out because they got a much more expensive cost base. But when you go out and your customers have got no orders, it doesn't really matter how much of a salesman you've got, how much value you can add, how good at marketing you've got, there is no market. You cannot survive. An absolutely horrendous situation.
Wow. Okay, that's a really tough time, like when you got basically like killed by the crisis. But we see you standing here today and now being, you know, full on into business model innovation. So how did you bridge the gap from where you were there to where you are now? How did that business model innovation concept kind of enter your life?
That's a great question. We'd been supported by one of the Malaysian innovation agencies. I think it was Cradle at the time. And they put us on a course to help us grow faster because we were doing really well. And they introduced us, Doc Seaver at Proficio introduced us to the business model canvas, which I think was only a year or so old at that point. And it was fun. I think like most entrepreneurs, I drew it out for the company. I thought, that's great, put it on one side and ignored it. It was only when we got into trouble, we could see what was happening. We could see that the sales weren't there, the cash flow wasn't there. And we worked through the MBA book of everything that you need to do to sort of survive in tough times. And frankly, it slowed the process, but it didn't really work. Nothing was helping. So we sat down, I think, one weekend with the business model canvas, drew it out and said, what can we do? Where can we go from here? And then there was a little bit of a brainwave. It's like, okay, actually, everything on the business model canvas is a hypothesis. It's like a jigsaw. And we can start moving things about. And this started giving us lots of insights about what the company was, where the value was, how we could explore. And so we treated it, looking back on it, we treated it as a nest of hypotheses that we could go out and test and validate. I didn't really realize this at the time. I was just following my instincts and exploring. And we went through, I think, 28 different variations of our business model canvas over a period of 6 to 18 months. Most of them just crashed and burned. They didn't go anywhere, didn't take us anywhere. It was just weekly sprints. Okay, this week we've got to try this, this week we've got to try and do this. And we narrowed down on exactly what was going to work. And eventually we discovered that it was a combination of things. We'd scrap most of the market. We'd be focused on selling people steel, which was 10 centimeters to 25 centimeters thick. So it's a very niche strategy. And at the on the backside of the business model, we'd have it heavily, heavily automated. So we could quote sort of something like 10, 15, 20 times the speed of all of our competitors and do it very quickly and accurately.
Wow. So you discovered the business model canvas, applied it to your own startup, and that kind of helped you to basically get on speed again. And now in your role, you're also helping other companies with their transformation, in particular through business model innovation and related tools here. So it's clear to see that obviously your own experience in founding and running startups led you to the path that you are on right now. And I'd kind of like to know more about the start of your journey with your own company. What did any of your first approaches to helping others transform look like?
Well, I started it off. I had no intention at the time of starting a consultancy. I think we were a bit short of money 1 year, and I thought, okay, I'd heard about Fiverr. So I went on Fiverr and said, right, for $5, I'm going to sketch out your business model canvas for you. And I picked up a few people, sort of said, yeah, this is good. They gave me five-star response. I got a few more. And I put the price up to 10, 25, 50, 100, 200. And people just kept on coming. And now, fundamentally, I'm selling that pretty much the same thing for $1,000 for people coming to me. And what they liked about this was that I could crystallize everything that an entrepreneur was thinking about their business model, put it onto one sheet of paper and explain it very clearly what their business was. Because if you've spoken to a lot of entrepreneurs, some of them can babble on for 30, 40 minutes and you still haven't got a clue what they're doing and why they're doing it and how they're going to make money. So this really helped them with the pitching. And it also sort of helped to explain them to understand how that they could use it to make money. Because within most business models, there is one or more virtuous cycles or feedback loops that make the business better and better as you nail those. And by showing these to the guys and girls who were coming to me, they could understand what it was that they really needed to go out and execute in the startups. And that seemed to work very, very well. And I loved doing it, which was even better. So eventually my wife and I sort of parted company, and I've slowly grown the practice of using business model innovation to where I am today.
That's super amazing to hear that you're also doing something that you really love and you're passionate about. And yeah, basically you're also helping companies to take something that on the first look is quite complicated or complex, and you try to put it on one sheet of paper and help them pitch it to others and kind of like help them present themselves to other people and other companies out there. And yeah, so you are working a lot in that field, and perhaps to the people listening who are not so familiar with business model innovation and the toolkit around it, can you share a bit more about the work that you do now in the field of business model innovation? What kind of methods or tools do you usually use to drive transformation for clients?
Sure. So I work very much with the Alexander Osterwalder toolkit. I start off with the Business Model Generation Handbook. It's a great resource, and one I think most people read one or two pages out of it and ignore the rest. And what I've done over the last 4 to 5 years is taken that and turned it into a reasonably robust methodology for going through the process with clients. And the first thing that we do is we just totally ignore their business model. We ignore your company, your business model, and we go out into the market. I mean, classic Porter's Five Forces. Who are your competitors? Who are the substitutes? Who are the alternatives to what you're offering? And we say, okay, can we do a business model canvas for each of those companies? What is their business model? And we often get this aha moment from a lot of clients, a lot of the more traditional clients, because they realize that half of their competitors have got exactly the same business model that they do, which then leaves them in a sort of point where they don't have a lot of differentiation. So they've got no differentiation. They're essentially in a red sea of competition. They've got no long-term ability to control pricing, to control profits, to control the ROI that they're looking for. So this is a moment of awakening where they see, this is what I need to do. So that's the first stage. We understand the territory. The next stage is going out and looking at what we call epicenters. Where are the focuses of business models? Do companies have their core competency, key resources in? Is it on the marketing side? Is it in the sort of the functionality, the creating the value? Let me give you an example. AWS from Amazon is all about the software farms, the server farms that it's got, and it's using those to deliver the cloud services. But it's all about those resources and utilizing them. Whereas somebody like Google is totally customer-centric. Everything that it does is about getting more data that it can supply to its bidders in AdSense. So very different approaches. And we look at, there are, I think, five or six different epicenters: finance-driven, value-driven, offer-driven, customer-driven, resource-driven. And we try and figure out, where do we want to play? Most people in a market, I think, are focused on the value, the offer, then we want to go somewhere else, because you're not going to be able to successfully differentiate yourself a lot of the time if you stay playing in that sort of space. So it's trying to get a sense of the market in that way. And the third step is going out and it's using Clayton Christensen's Jobs to be Done. What job? What is the problem that the customer's got out there? How are they trying to solve it? Why are they hiring you to solve that? And we go out and we sort of start coming up with a number of hypotheses. The next stage is to start putting all of this together, start coming up with some draft ideas about how can we build a business model that is going to go out and disrupt those existing competitors. What's going to cause them to cannibalize themselves? What's going to cause them to get really frustrated, to spend lots of money on something or other to try and respond to you? What's going to make it incredibly difficult for them to respond? And then the final stage is to go out and actually start testing, validating this out in the real world to see what actually works. Because a lot of it up to this point has just been thinking about brain work, trying to find something that works. But really, with any new business model, if you don't test it, I mean, you're going to be in a world of pain, as lots of entrepreneurs over the time have found.
Yeah, that's actually like super interesting to hear that you have sort of like a five-step process or like a secret recipe, so to say, for finding your success and for helping others with the methods and tools from the Business Model Innovation Toolkit. And now also looking on your client side, it's really interesting to hear about your work with different companies, different institutions in driving change together. But I can also imagine it might not always be easy, you know, you coming in from the outside and wanting to drive change. Do you have an example of how you helped your clients with their struggles and how they accepted change and transformation to move their business forward? Or how was their openness or reluctance towards change?
I think it very much depends on who I'm working with. Often the people who really, really need me are the people who are least able to change. I've worked with some listed palm oil plantations in Malaysia, and that has just been very, very difficult indeed, because they're not in a state where they're able to really think about change. But I also worked last year, I can't say the name, but it's one of the larger British universities, and they came to me and said, we're really worried about the future of work. What's that going to mean for the university? How do we start looking at our business model to make sure that we're still going to be relevant in 2050 or moving forward? And so, right, okay, this is really cool. This is going to be business model innovation. And business model innovation is almost always about disruptive innovation. It's about making a big step change. So I was very excited. And then they said to me, yes, so Dennis, we're currently growing at about 5% a year. So if your work could help us grow at about 6% a year, that would be absolutely great. And I'm going, What? This is not going to, how can we do this? You're asking for disruptive innovation, but at the same time, you only want incremental innovation because the organization is very conservative. And so what we're doing there is we're sort of slowly working through all the committees to get it funded and to get it moving on, knowing that to a certain extent, this is a little bit of a Trojan horse that's being sold there, and it's going to be a lot more disruptive as it goes out into the market and starts reaching its full potential. So that's what it's like working with larger organizations. There's a lot more politics, there's a lot more resistance to change. It's like that there's an accelerator, they want to be doing something, but at the same time there's a break and different people are controlling those. Whereas when you come to startups, it's a lot more fun. You can move a lot more quickly. I was working with a Malaysian startup last year, Saver of Life, who deliver vegan food to people in Kuala Lumpur. And everything went wrong when lockdown happened because we lost all of our sales channels. Everything went. So we were sitting down with the business model canvas. And when you've exhausted a lot of the obvious things on it, sort of moving it around, you start asking stupid questions, things that are just so stupid that normally you wouldn't do it, because they're really good if you take them seriously of unlocking a lot of value. And I can't remember who it was, but somebody says, well, what happens if we give away all of our food for free? And okay, so there was a moment of shock and said, okay, we are going to answer that. And within about 20, 30 minutes, we actually come up with a business model where we could give everything away for free. And that in under a month increased sales by 20 or 30 times compared to what they were before lockdown. And before lockdown, they were growing at 20% a month. I mean, so it was a huge change just by using the business model canvas to get a very different insight and way of looking at the business model that you're playing around with. So to sum it up, entrepreneurs, startups, more agile, they're a lot more open to being innovative on their business model. Larger corporations, it's a lot of fun, but at the same time, there are constraints about how radical they will be.
Basically, with your example, you are saying that you actually, by just starting to ask stupid questions, you figured out like completely new ways to improve the business model and to also help the company. So that's quite a nice approach to change the business model and to go a different way that maybe you wouldn't have chosen to if you weren't in that position. So maybe also that COVID situation here helped to think out of the box and think of completely new and different situations here. And when you look back and like your work that you're doing with the clients that you have, and when you find those aha moments, are there bigger learnings that you can share with us that where you would say, okay, this is something that sticks out and that you want to share?
I think the thing that really leaps out at me that I've learned over the last 5-6 years as I've been doing this is that if we stick to the right brain approach of being very logical and analytical, everything's a lot harder. By that, I mean most people who do strategy, they've gone to a business school like me, they know most of the strategy professors, they know most of the models. So when we sit down with a company, pretty much by and large, we all do the same things, and given the same type of data, we came to the same results. And that's one reason why you'll get everybody building copper mines at the same time, and then a few years later, the price will collapse, and or 5G networks or something similar like that. So you then end up trapped by competition. And so one of the things that I really like is Rory Sutherland, who I can't remember, he works with one of the big ad agents. He talks about being a lot more magical, being a lot more mystical, doing really stupid things to be looking for insight. And it's, so you're getting off the beaten track. And so this comes back to the exploration again, right? How many wonderful new plants are you going to find by walking along the side of a motorway? Probably not many, because if it existed, somebody would have already picked it up. You've got to be going out into the wilderness, and it's the wilderness, a lot of wasted time for sure, it's the wilderness that you're going to be finding the insight that you can then be using to transform your company, to transform your industry, to be creating entirely new industries. At the same time, going back to the philosophy of science, there's a chap called Thomas Kuhn, who's taught quite a lot in philosophy courses, and he talks about when you're having a change in worldview, which fundamentally a business model innovation is a change of worldview. It's a change in the way that an industry or a market looks at how you make money in that industry. He talks about anomalies, which are things that can't really be explained by existing business models. It's a little bit difficult to translate it into business terms, but let me give you an example. So far in the taxi industry, about 10, 15 years ago, everybody knew that there was a huge problem connecting drivers with passengers. But what were people doing about it? They weren't doing anything about it. They assumed that that problem was there forever. And so you've got this huge anomaly stuck in the middle of the industry that nobody was addressing. It's the elephant in the room. And then Uber said, no, this is a problem and we can go out and fix it. Boom. You've then got a very new business model that you can sort of then start exploiting. Google did something similar, so did Amazon. In fact, pretty much all of the major tech companies spotted an anomaly. Amazon's was, okay, we've got an infinite bookshelf rather than the bookstore having only a limited amount of space. And these insights then create something very, very different. So what we're doing a lot of the time is we are looking for anomalies, things that don't make sense. And these are often things that people within the industry can't figure out. I was working with a Midwest law firm selling trusts and wills. And to start with, it was trying to figure out how do you sell this in a bit more of an interesting way. And I'm telling you, lawyers have got no idea about marketing, going through everybody in Illinois' sort of websites to see, and they basically said, we're a lawyer who takes your money, we are a lawyer who's very good. That was their marketing spiel. But at the same time, they were being attacked by boilerplate providers of wills and trusts, and we only figured out what the anomaly was. Why are all your customers male? Why don't you get any women coming and buying wills and trusts? And then, so we've got the sales staff to go out and ask, why are you coming and buying a will and a trust? I said, my wife told me to. My wife wants me to. And it was actually, the men didn't want to buy it. They were being driven by the women. So why don't the women want to do it? And that was the anomaly for that particular customer. So that one insight, that anomaly, then transforms how we think about the business model. And then that made it totally different. And so this is what you need to be looking for. It's partly ignore everything in your industry and just look for what is weird, look for what's magical, and ignore all the MBA stuff. And this is, sometimes it's a little bit difficult to sell, but there is always something out there that we do find.
Yeah, I really like the fact that you're saying, okay, look for what's magical out there and look for what's weird and don't just look at like the obvious and go out there and explore and try to find those anomalies to kind of figure out, okay, how can you improve your business model and how can you improve your business in general? So that's a really nice example. And also like how this probably wasn't obvious to the law firm in the first place. And then you came in and now it seems like so obvious to us, like when you say it. And it's always super inspiring to hear about the successes and the learnings that you just mentioned. And for us also interesting to hear it from our guests and see what impact they made in driving innovation forward. But at the same time, we're also interested in anything that perhaps didn't work out the way you imagined. Are there any mistakes you made along the way that you would like to share, or anything that didn't work out the way you expected it in the first place?
I think pretty much every client I make mistakes because literally you're heading out into the wilderness. If getting lost, is that a success or is that a failure? Sometimes you need to be going out and getting lost. So with clients, we will be coming up with lots and lots of hypotheses because essentially the business model canvas is a collection of hypotheses. These are claims that we're making about reality that seem to be true given the information that we've got, but then often they just don't pan out. Just trying to think of a specific example. I think working with one client at the moment who is rolling out 5G in the UK, we had some feelings about, okay, we're going to be able to make huge opportunities with, I think it was local councils, and it's just like, no, those did not exist. But that's okay. You come back and you say, okay, that hypothesis failed. It doesn't matter. We've learned a little bit faster, because it's so much better to have these failures early, because, I mean, a few days of my time, it's reasonably expensive, but it's a lot less expensive than spending the 70 million or so that it costs an FMCG company to bring a new product or a new innovation to market. So we go out early, we test it, we see what happens, and then we reinforce success, which is the classic lean startup approach to this.
Right. Yeah. I also like that you say, okay, you learn a lot faster by making those mistakes and then learning from it and going on. So I really like this, that you kind of focus on the learning approach, and, you know, mistakes are part of the process and part of us improving in the right direction. And right. So now looking at the current situation we are in right now, with the pandemic still very much present at this point, is COVID also perhaps somehow changing your processes or ways of working, or is it changing your clients' perception of change or so on?
What we found during COVID, and this was driven by working with the client in the Midwest, we were 12 hours apart. So it was an absolute nightmare to be trying to get sessions together. We started doing this asynchronously. So he'd tell me something and I'd absorb it, and then I'd send over the latest iteration of the business model canvas and the hypotheses that we were playing about as a 30-40 minute video. He'd watch it at his leisure or read the transcript, start scribbling all over it, and it would come back. So we were managing to get the best of both worlds for the company, and that worked very, very effectively. For my clients, what I've seen is that corporates generally are doing less business model innovation. I mean, I think I was reading something by BT, the British telecoms company, this morning, and they said that there's been 500 billion less spent on digital transformation over the last year due to COVID, which is a pretty huge amount. And very much when I've been looking at clients across the world, they're tending to say, okay, withdraw into themselves. Startups haven't noticed it at all to a large extent. A lot of the seed ones, that they just want to go out and conquer the world. So that's stayed pretty much the same. And for government-led organizations, I've seen they're more interested at a policy level. So we've got to encourage more business model innovation. How do we do this? How does that happen? But then looking at the budget and the amount of money that is being going to out into programs to support it, I'm not seeing that yet. Though maybe over the next 5 or 6 months, that will start to happen.
Cool. Yeah, it's interesting to see how you're actually also already realizing such a big difference in the companies that you're working with, be it like startups or large corporations or like also government institutions and so on. Interesting to see how different they also react to these changes. But yeah, let's also see how this evolves further in the future. And now also looking at your future and with your job and the role that you're in, is there anything you're especially looking forward to, or in general, anything that's next for you that you can share with us?
What's up next for me? I'm spending lots of time each week trying to put a lot of my thoughts on business model innovation down into a book. So I'm there each week. I have a target of about 5,000 words that I have to put into Scrivener. So hopefully the first draft is going to be done by 1st of August. And then towards the end of the year, I'm going to be sending it out to people to sort of start having comments and feedback and start a little bit of a reading group to do that. So that should be out hopefully next year if all goes to plan, and it's going to be fitting in the space between a lot of the Alexander Osterwalder books, which tell you what to do or tell you how to do it, but not the what and the why. So I'm looking much more into the space where we're looking at the ideas. How do ideas change the world? How do you generate the ideas that are going to create companies that transform the world? How can you reliably be creating companies like Google or Amazon by spotting the anomalies and then being able to exploit them rather than sort of just copying your competitor? We're lawyers, this is the way that we do it, or we are the Uber for this or the Airbnb for that. I mean, it doesn't matter. I mean, if you look at the largest oil companies, they've all got very similar business models. You look at telecoms companies, they've all got very similar business models. How do you find create companies that are the only one in their industry with that type of business model. That's what we're looking for, because that is going to be creating all the wonderful jobs that we're going to need as we go forward, because digital transformation is going to be taking so many jobs away from people through automation. So we've got to be looking at new business models to be having a wonderful, interesting work life as we go on towards the end of the century.
Right. That's super interesting to hear what kind of plans you have for the near future, and that also business model innovation continues to be relevant in the field as well. So, Dennis, thank you so much for sharing your personal entrepreneurial journey with us and all the successes and mistakes along the way. And it's also really inspiring to hear how you drive change with business model innovation. It's been a real pleasure having you here, and I'm curious to see what the future holds for you as well. Thank you again.
Thank you, Christine. It's been wonderful talking to you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Lost in Transformation. If you enjoy our podcast, please subscribe to our channel and leave us a review on iTunes. Join us next time for another episode of our podcast.